Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be talking about dogs today. And we're going to be talking with Bonnie Bergen about how you can teach your dog to read. No joke. You really, really can do this. Now, Bonnie Bergen is a woman with a tremendous background. She's en route to her office right now, so we're waiting to get a call from her. And as soon as she does call into the studio, then we will be bringing her online to discuss this absolutely fascinating research and study that she's done. She is the founder of the only accredited university, the Bonnie Bergen University of Canine Studies. Yes, you could actually go to her university and become accredited in working with animals. Her stories are amazing, and so we're going to be hearing some of that. While we're waiting for Bonnie to call in, I really wanted to share a phenomenal story with you, because not only did it touch my heart, but it really, really shows me what people can do to take care of certain needs in life. And we can't all do everything. And there are so many animals, so many dogs and cats and other critters that just are abandoned, or maybe their owners actually die and there's no one to take them. And this is about a dog, Jerry Sad Eyes. Oh, I know. You'd hear that and you just go, oh, my goodness, and your heart just goes out immediately. What is the story behind this fabulous dog? Well, a lady by the name of Jennifer Caracol, she was online, like so many of us are frequently, and she sees this image of this extremely emaciated dog, and he's in a shelter, and nobody wants this dog. Now, through the years, Jenny has had a very good association rescuing animals, and different rescue groups will call her. And she had fostered animals for so many years. So her heart really went out to any of the strays. But, you reach a point where there's only so many animals you can take care of. But when she saw this dog, Jerry, and she nicknamed him Jerry Sad Eyes, she just couldn't ignore him. Now, this dog wasn't a young dog. It was 11 years old, black lab mix, had been dumped, abandoned the year before. No one spent any time with this dog. Now, the people at the shelter, they have so many animals to take care of. The time that they can give is just very minuscule. They do the best they can, and I have my hats off to the people that work in these shelters, because they really love animals. Now, what happened, which was interesting, is that she just couldn't delete this image of this dog. So she said, I'm going to go in. I'm going to see him. And it was stated that nobody had ever visited this dog. Now, can you imagine this dog laying on a bed in a shelter, nobody even coming in to pet him? And she said, okay, I just can't get past this. So she went in to see him. Now, this dog, 11 years old, barely lifted his head. He only weighed 80 pounds, and the shelter, in the Facebook page, they said, he needs a home fast. He is just, his heart is just broken. He's abandoned. Nobody wants him. And I know what happens to animals when they go through that, because I had a very special experience relative to that. Well, Jennifer and her husband, Victor, already had 3 adopted dogs, 2 cats. They lived in Delaware. But they knew if they didn't take him, nobody else was going to take him. He would never know. It just broke her heart. She said he was never going to know the love of anyone or be even believing he's worthy, and she just couldn't stand that. So Jennifer and her husband drove to the shelter in upstate New York, and they were told by the people at the shelter, Jerry Sad Eyes is just absolutely active. We've never seen him like this in a year we've had him. And this is before they determined that they were going to, you know, after Jennifer. Animals know what's going on. He knew something was happening. And he looked at her with eyes that said so loudly, "Am I going home with you? Did you come for me?" Well, the staff was in tears when they handed over Jerry Sad Eyes' blanket. They loved him, but they were thrilled that he had a family because they just couldn't give this elderly dog the care that he needed. Now, the dog slept, and she looked up the name Jerry, and she said it's a short abbreviation of the name Jeremiah. And she said Jeremiah means uplifted, exalted. And she said, boy, that dog really needs every bit of that. Well, within 1 month after they brought him home, Jeremiah was walking a few blocks, greeting people. He was having a wonderful life with this family that had adopted him. And 6 months went by, and then he passed away. He suffered a stroke. And she said it really hit her very, very hard, but she said, you know what? He had a life that last 6 months that he wouldn't have had otherwise. He didn't have a broken heart. She said he was mischievous. So she had a blog, and she was typing on her blog, Pets Alive. That's her website, actually. And she said he was gentle, he was patient, he was wonderful. But she was made to think after this particular experience, and she said, you know, there's so many older dogs that nobody's paying any attention to. So she had three friends that decided they wanted to team up with her. And they joined a group in another town that wasn't too far away that helped senior dogs. And they were involved with adoption events and fundraisers. But Jennifer said, we need something like this in our community. So she asked the women, their names are Diane, Erica, and Dana, if they were interested in putting together their own rescue for elderly dogs. So all of these women, these four women, decided they were going to put together a nonprofit senior dog haven and hospice. Now, this is a seniordoghaven.org. You can check it out. It's for dogs that are seven and older. And, you know, the big dogs, they age very quickly. And by golly, the homes of these three women were opened up. They ended up having 18 other people volunteer to assist them. They won a grant from the Doris Day Foundation. And in 1 year, with donations of food, supplies, and vet care from various pet lovers, in 1 year they rescued 91 elderly dogs. And they were found on the street. Many of them had health issues. 55 of those 91 were adopted, and the rest are living in volunteers' homes. And they're, you know, when you find a dog that's coat is so thickly matted that its leg is glued to its body because of the dirt, I mean, that is amazing. That's what they had, a little dog named Gemma. And there was a little Maltese. After they bathed it, they found it was a little Maltese. And it's a part of Jennifer's family now. There's Lily, a blind 12-year-old poodle. She was so lonely. And the 80-year-old woman that owned her, when just before she passed away, said, I just love her to pieces. But you know what? Elderly dogs are being brought into homes by people that are not necessarily older. They're younger people, too. And there was Duke, a 14-year-old mini poodle adopted by a young couple. And when they brought a puppy into the household, this couple said, don't have to worry about the puppy. Duke teaches our nine-month-old exactly what he needs to know. One of the comments that Jennifer made, she said, no matter what these old dogs have been through, they're so forgiving. They're very grateful, and they give so much love in return. She said, we'd like to make sure that all of our dogs get happy endings because it's never too late to be loved. I think those words are very, very powerful. And I think when we can pass that along and just know that sometimes the dog might be older, yes, may not move as fast as a young puppy and may not do tricks and turns the way a young puppy does, But those older dogs can be very, very special and bring something into your life that's wonderful. So check out seniordoghaven.org. That's seniordoghaven.org. If you want to know more about dogs that are a little bit older, need a home, maybe you'd like to foster a dog. It's really absolutely wonderful. There's also a senior/old dog and cat rescue network that's out there. And Goldie's, G-O-L-D-I-E, apostrophe S, Oldie's Cat Rescue. So there are a lot of people out there that are doing their part. Who knows? Maybe something will call to you and it'll make a difference. Also, you can tweet a pet, adoptapet.com/twitteracritter.
You can get a senior shelter dog or cat
near you. And if you want to promote it, you can post it on Twitter if you have a senior animal that you want to find a home for. Also, if maybe you don't want to have a pet, maybe your lifestyle doesn't encourage that, and you'd like to donate food to a pet food bank, well, this is something that's very important, because if you will check your local food banks, taking care of situations, and just in your own community can make such a difference. You can take it to a local food bank in your area, and then they'll make sure that that animal food gets to maybe some elderly person that really can't afford to feed their beloved pets the way they'd like to. So there's a lot of opportunity here to work with animals. And like I said, Bonnie Bergen, we are waiting for her to call into the studio, and as soon as she does, we're going to be bringing her.
I'm here.
You are there, Bonnie. Oh, my goodness.
I'm here. I got to listen to quite a bit of what you had to say about elderly dogs, and I totally agree. I've got two that are 14, and, you know, I wouldn't give them up for the world.
Oh, they're so special. They're so special. I'm just delighted. I didn't know that you were on the air listening with me, so this is terrific. Audience that I've got here, I've told them a little bit about you, your Bergen University of Canine Studies, and this, when I first found out about you, I have to tell you, it was so strange. Something popped up on my computer. I was on the internet. Something popped up, and I came across this Bergen University of Canine Studies. And I said, what is this? And so I go into your website, and I find out that there's actually this university that enables people to get degrees in canine studies. And I called your office, and I'll never forget the young lady saying, you want a what? I said, I want to do an interview, and I understand that Bonnie Bergen has a book, Teach Your Dog to Read. Is this possible? She said, oh, yes. And the next thing I know, I had the opportunity to chat with you. You graciously sent me a copy of your book, and I love this golden retriever sitting on, you know, the picture of sitting at just at full alert with a graduate's cap, tassel down, smiling, saying, yeah, I graduated. Teach your dog to read. Bonnie, this is great.
It is. It just speaks to how intelligent dogs are.
Well, I adore the pictures in here because I love seeing all the canines sitting at the desk, because they're in school, and they're all students. Now, you yourself, you have Nexus, that's your white golden retriever, and Kayla, your black lab, and you credit the dogs for teaching you how to think, but I want to go back a little bit before we get into this. I want you to tell my audience how you really got involved with search and rescue and working with dogs for therapy. Your book is just packed with all kinds of interesting information. What made you decide to follow this absolutely amazing career of yours?
Well, to keep it short, I was in a master's class. I didn't know anything about disabilities. I didn't know anything about dogs. And I just got this epiphany that dogs could help people with disabilities. And I went out to try to put it together. Guide dogs told me no. You know, every trainer I talked to told me no, it couldn't be done, it wouldn't work, give it up. And I was stupid. You know, I think they say that about a lot of people who invent things, that it's their ignorance and their naivete. And so I didn't realize it couldn't be done. And so I kept pushing and pushing until I found someone with a disability who was extremely disabled, I might add, by the name of Carrie Knaus. And the two of us worked together to train a dog by the name of Abdul. She would sit in her house, and she needed 24-hour attendant care. She was that disabled, but she would ask me, is there a way that the dog could open the refrigerator door and get a packed lunch out of it and give it to me? I'm strong enough that I could undo the packed lunch and eat the sandwich, and that way I don't have somebody with me all the time. Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, we can do that. I mean, I didn't have a clue. And she said, when they leave sometimes to go get groceries, it's dark when they return, and I'm sitting in the dark. Is there a way to train the dog to turn the light on? And I'm going, sure, we'll figure out how to do that. Now, I was a teacher, but I knew nothing about dog training, so I was going by teaching methods. And we did. We taught the dog all these things. She said, when I drop the remote, I hate calling someone to have to come pick it up for me, because, you know, even though she was born with that disability, she still felt the same cultural, social mores that the rest of us do about not wanting to bother someone else. Mm-hmm. And so she wanted the dog to be able to do it. And, of course, the dogs love to help. And so we trained the dog to pick up things she needed and bring them to her when she needed them. And that started the whole concept of the service dog, which is now worldwide. There are dogs, you know, there are trainers and programs training dogs all around the world. Then I was with a program that I founded called Canine Companions for Independence, and I kind of, you know, I was being pulled two ways. I had a lot of people coming in and asking me to teach them how to do it. And I had my own program, and I thought, well, if I teach people how to do it, I'm creating my own competition. What can I do here? And, of course, it was much more important to me to help people with disabilities. So I left my program and started the university to be able to teach people how to do it. And now we have hundreds of people all around the world and all through the United States that have their own programs that have increased the number of service dogs that get placed. We have a program where we're working with veterans and active duty military people who come back with PTSD, and, mm-hmm. and we have them train dogs to it's kind of a canine therapy, but they're training dogs to be service dogs, and those dogs can only be placed with their fellow veterans who are suffering from combat-related injuries. And mm-hmm. we're actually looking to come up to Tacoma and put a program to place in place up there. So we're we just keep expanding the role of the dog in society. As you know, I helped write the original ADA regulations for the laws that allow access, and you know, we keep expanding what these dogs can do. A lot of our students are doing that. A lot of people who hear about what we do are doing that. And I think today the dog is recognized as a much... this was like 38 years ago, so mm-hmm. I think today the dog is recognized as a much more viable partner. And, you know, the methods that used to be used where there was a lot of choke chain jerks and a lot of, you know, more aversive methods in training have gone by the wayside, and there's a lot more gentle... teaching methods rather than training the body of the dog. We're teaching the mind of the dog to do things, and it's much more successful. I mean, the dogs are pretty darned intelligent, and given a chance, they expand their capabilities enormously in terms of how they can help and how they can integrate themselves into the lives of people with disabilities.
Well, I think it's just amazing, and having known a number of people with disabilities through the years, I'm just thrilled to find out about your university, because I think having the accreditation where you're actually going to be trained by people who are knowledgeable, all of this is so very, very important. And there's been research on dogs that are able to detect cancer, and not every dog is going to be suitable, but what I liked is that you said, there's no such thing as a specific breed for doing this kind of work. It really, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it depends on the temperament of the animal. and whether or not that's really what they want to do. They're not unlike us. Not everybody's meant to be a race car driver. Not everybody's meant to be a teacher. Not everybody's meant to do any one thing. We're not clones. We're not these dull, uninteresting aspects of life. And animals are the same way. They have their personality. They have their strengths. They have their weaknesses. And this is something that when an animal's temperament suits the environment for working with people, you can't. They just love to do this. They love to please. They absolutely are thrilled to be a part of something that allows them to feel like they're accomplishing something. This is something I think is very special. I've used the word something three times in just a few seconds. But it really is important, I think. Let's step forward to the year 2002. What prompted you to step into the arena as a former teacher to say, I can teach a dog to read? First of all, someone might say, who cares? Why bother? What prompted this with you?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I don't think when you're a teacher you ever give up being a teacher. And I knew that I knew that reading has only really been around for 5,000 years, that prior to that, you know, it was memory, but it wasn't literally putting words on pages. And that as soon as they started putting words on pages, the human brain, which is not designed to read, it's designed to talk and it's designed to walk, but there's nothing in the brain for reading, and that's why, quite frankly, it takes so long for children to learn to read. It has to network different parts of the brain. And when that happens, it basically allows people, because it's activating so many parts of the brain, to start to think outside the box. And as a consequence, as soon as people started to read, you know, it just progress after progress after progress, computers, you know, men on the moon, I mean, you name it. And the brain has just evolved via reading. So we thought, okay, we want these dogs to be really helpful to people with disabilities. We want them not to have to be told every single step in the process of picking up that remote off the floor. We want them to understand that there's a need for the remote and therefore bring it to me when I ask you to, without a lot of intricate components involved. And so we taught them to read, and it's absolutely astounding. I think most of the scientists have been really astounded, because they're looking, the dogs don't have what's called a macular, so they can't look at really refined lettering, but mm-hmm. they can look at big flashcards with, you know, 68-point print on them, and they can differentiate. In fact, they would get confused at their initial stages of learning, if there were two S's, if two words start with S's like speak and sit, they would get confused because they actually were able to detect and note and recognize the S. As they got more sophisticated, of course, they were able to recognize the word speak over the word sit. They could certainly differentiate sit from a down card, things like that. But the more opportunity they were given to network parts of their brain, the more they were, you know, basically being evolving into a more thoughtful, responsive animal. And, you know, we got to the point where we couldn't even put them in a room because they'd figure out a way to get out of it. You know, they were so smart. But they're just, you know, we have not, and I think the most important thing to recognize is we have not found out where the mind of the dog stops. You know, mm-hmm. at what point can it not do more? It's us. We keep predetermining that they can't do more. And I'm as guilty of that as anyone. I had a dog who just did an amazing thing about, you know, trying to bring a ball in and actually just brought the dog in using, you know, just pulling the swimming pool cover in, and I thought this was a one-time deal. It could never be done again, and I never tried. And for 5 years, I taught my students how, you know, the students here at the university, how amazing the mind of the dog is that she was able to figure this out. And then 5 years later, after she broke her leg, after she had a lot of scar tissue in her back leg, I thought, you know what, I'm going to try it again. Now, how was that for dumb? 5 years, and I didn't have the smarts to see if she could do it again. And she did it again and again and again until I have some beautiful video of her doing it. But, you know, it's our limitation, you know, just like teaching them to look at a two-dimensional shape and expecting them to be unable to recognize the meaning of it. They can, you know, being taught, they can read, basically, looking at two-dimensional shapes. And you know, we all know that they're much more responsive to three-dimensional shapes. Most any animal, including humans, are. But, yeah, they're remarkable.
Yeah. This is,
their mind is remarkable.
It really is. When you think about children, and we're going to be taking a break in just a minute, so bear with me, because when we come back, I want to share with my audience some of the steps and techniques that you have, because your book, Teach Your Dog to Read, absolutely, I was thinking of my little Scotty Victor, but I want to just stop and make a comment. When we're teaching children to read, it has been proven and demonstrated over and over again, if you have signs with a word like door, put a, and I had a friend that did this with her child, and I've known of some other parents that have done it. And it's primarily the women that do it. But anyway, I know Maureen went and put these signs up. She started when her little one was walking around, before he started walking. She'd say door, and there would be the four letters, D-O-O-R. And this kid ended up reading at a very early age, and it was association, repetition. And this is what you do with the dogs. And I just loved some of the suggestions that you had in here, and I thought, I wonder if I could do this with Victor. That Victor is 8 years old, he's a Scottish Terrier, and he communicates very effectively and very, very well through his body language. He understands what I say, and I know you have your dogs, and they're wonderful, wonderful critters, but I was astonished, and we'll take a break as soon as I share this with you. 350 dogs have displayed the capability of reading, and there are dogs that have been trained in Japan that read Japanese characters. Why not? They talk to them in Japanese. Why wouldn't they be able to read in Japanese? It's part of the culture. Well, when we come back, we're going to find out some fascinating facts about the research and actual training that my guest Bonnie Burden does. Teach your dog to read? You betcha. You can do it, and it's not a real complicated process. So we're taking a break for just a minute. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back with Bonnie and finding out how we can create a stronger bond, actually, with the dogs that we love so much. But even more so, hey, it might make training a little bit easier, too. This is Donna. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Are you interested in teaching your dog to read? Now, this isn't mumbo jumbo. Bonnie Bergen is my guest. She has at the University of Canine Studies. This is the real thing, folks. And she's found through her own research and through demonstration that dogs, just like us, love to learn. They love to be challenged. And because of her research, she has been teaching animals how to read. They have many of them, service dogs, have a 90-word vocabulary. When they're with clients that have disabilities, those service dogs that have been trained, they learn even more words. And, Bonnie, I understand that there's a border collie named Rico, and border collies are smart, that knows 200 words.
I've talked to the trainer and the scientists that have been involved in that study, and they have, you know, been doing amazing things. And I believe it, of course, with my experience with dogs.
Now, Nexus is the dog that really worked with you in learning how to read. How did you start this out? What was your very first step in teaching Nexus?
Foolishly or intelligently, I can't say which, started with flashcards. And I just did straight association, exactly what you've already brought up with your friend and that child, and just did straight association. I wrote SIT in big, thick letters on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, showed it to her, said the word SIT, you know, or RUT-SIT. See, I'm even so used to, you can't even, around dogs, you can't even say the words. You have to spell them in the hopes that they won't cotton on to your, you know, what you're saying. So I'm so used to doing this, it's amazing. Anyway, I showed her the card and said sit, and I showed her the card and said sit, and I showed her the card and said sit, and then I showed her the card and didn't say anything, and she sat. Now, I do know at that very first level, she was really responding to the whole, you know, the flashcard itself. She wasn't looking at the individual letters. But then we went into another word, and she started to pay attention to the letter because, of course, sitting no longer was applicable, and she started to figure that out. And then we went on to a third word, and it really clarified to her that it was those thick black letters on that white sheet of paper that defined what she was supposed to do. So we just, you know, we basically followed commands. What I think was the most astounding, I have to say, and there was a lot of reaction to that, but the next level of shock in terms of what dogs could do and figure out was showing them a stick figure. So now they're looking at the card. They know the card means something. They know the card's telling them something that they're supposed to do. And they're used to that now. We've done it, you know, with several words, they're comfortable with the concept. And then I pulled out a stick figure, because I'd done a lot of research into human reading, and I was you know, pretty familiar with how the mind of the human actually acquired reading capabilities. And so I created a stick figure of a dog in a SIT position, in a sit position. And I showed it to the dog, and I said nothing. Now, how would the dog looking at a stick figure of a dog in a sit position know what that meant? But the dog sat.
Mm-hmm.
He sat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I pulled out another one of a dog in a D-O-W, in a down position, and I showed it to the dog, and the dog looked at it, and then downed. And this is without teaching them. What they had been taught earlier was to look at the card and recognize that there was some direction on it. But now they were looking at a card with a stick figure of a dog doing something and taking that as direction when they were not taught what it was. They just were able to discern. And so, again, the mind of the dog continues to just be awesome, and I think, you know, my dream, and I know that probably, you know, won't be me that does it, though I hope I have a say in it at some point, is to create a school. We start training dogs at 3.5 weeks of age. We actually start teaching them to sit,
wow,
to down,
that
to,
young?
To retrieve, you know, when, you know, clearly very, very young. And we don't teach them for very long, so we don't wear them out. We teach them for about 5 minutes a day, but they learn. It's deeply embedded. These behaviors are now deeply embedded. They've got it. They know exactly what they're supposed to do and when they're supposed to do it, and it sticks with them throughout their whole life, except for when they're in their teenage stage, I might add. And then, you know, it becomes a little different picture. But when they get past,
yes,
the teenage stage, it's back there, and it's nice and solid. So they're turning lights on at 7 weeks of age. They're tugging open doors at 6 weeks of age. They're doing a number of tasks at that very, very early age, and they're understanding the concept and the meaning, et cetera. But then we put them out in puppy homes, and when they come back, after they've had a chance to be socialized and taken out in public and had an opportunity to, you know, expand their horizons, and they come back to be finished, to be placed with someone with a disability, we bring them back in and start doing the more sophisticated commands, and they just remember them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a little bit of catch-up or a little bit of, you know, working to remind them of what some of the more sophisticated methodologies are. But, hey, they do it. We teach them to shut a door. We teach them by having them jump on the door and push at it. You know, that shuts the door, and they learn that, and they're comfortable with that. Now they understand that word, that command, means to shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get it, when they get the concept, then they do it not the way we taught them, but a way that will still accomplish the task. So some of them will go up with their nose and push the door shut because they know the object or the end result is to have the door shut. And they no,
mm-hmm,
longer do it the way we taught them. They've come up with their own conclusion as how to best do it, and they use their own brain to figure out the best way they want to do it, and they do it. And so to go from being taught how to do something to then turning around and coming up with your own idea of how to do it to accomplish the same end goal, that's pretty darned amazing. That's pretty darned amazing.
I think so. Now, one point I want to bring up is a dog is never too old to learn. This,
oh, no,
to me,
no,
is something that is very significant because there's the old adage, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, which is not the truth.
No,
and
they're
so
slower.
They're slower, but they
are more thoughtful about it in many cases. But if you read any research on humans, older humans who go into a learning situation, the behaviors are almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more thoughtful, the slower, the kind of wanting more information before they're willing to try something. That's what an older person does, and that's what an older dog does. But there is nothing about not learning it. It's just giving them the tools to learn it the way they best approach the task.
Now, you have some wonderful photos in here. This is a how-to type of book, so you could work with your animal. And one of the points that you brought out were the stick figures, and people can go to your website, which is assistancedog.org, I believe, and they can download those stick figure images that dogs relate to. But the dogs know the difference in the images
after,
and what
after
they mean.
After they've taught, and this is really important, after they've been taught to look at a flashcard and recognize that it means something to them, and that's why we teach the word SIT and the word DOW in first. So they'll look at the flashcard and know that they're supposed to do something. Once
mm-hmm.
they've got that concept down, then you show them the stick figures, and they will try to figure those stick figures out without your telling them what it means.
Mm-hmm. You also talk in your book about something that's very important to me, and that's literacy. And I know that many individuals that might have children of their own or grandchildren, they're aware how important the library is and how important it is to know how to read. You bring in some statistics, and this is relating how to teach a dog to help children learn to read. This is a very special program, which I think is marvelous. It's had incredible success. But one of the stats that you bring out is that more than 8 in 10 kids 8 of 10 kids in juvenile detention centers are illiterate. And this is something that is just appalling. I mean, it's a sad statement about our school system. But, yet
but it also speaks, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it also speaks to the fact that these kids were not given a chance to learn to read, and when they couldn't read, they couldn't think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking outside the box means to look at a different life and expect a different life than your parents had. So
mm-hmm.
if these kids can't read, then they expect to do just what their parents did, get into drugs, go to jail, go to prison. They can't believe that there is another life out there possible for them. When they learn to read, they can start to envision other ways of life. So
yeah.
So it's not surprising, really, that that percentage are in juvenile hall, the percentage of non-readers are in juvenile hall, because they didn't think anything different was going to happen in their life.
Mm-hmm.
They have to learn to read. We have to teach people to read, these kids, so that they can start to believe in themselves and believe in other ways than what maybe their parents were involved in. And
well,
and that's why we
also,
do so much of the work we do.
Right. And this is one of the many programs that your university gives training on, and people are accredited through this university. It's the Bergen University of Canine Studies. It's B-E-R-G-I-N. Bonnie founded this many years ago, and you can go to the website assistancedog.org, assistancedog.org. I am just so impressed and just so thrilled, and I know you've been honored by Oprah Winfrey and a number of other organizations for the work that you've done, Bonnie, and I just think it is incredible, and I feel that this is so important. We do not realize the talents of these wonderful four-pawed friends in our lives and the difference it makes with so many people when the animals can read, can understand certain images. And it's just a great read. And for those of you that really have a passion for your animals, the book Teach Your Dog to Read is a must-have for your library. And there are programs that are offered in different parts of the country. She said that she's going to be doing a program in the Pacific Northwest here, Seattle-Tacoma area. By golly, this is great. Bonnie Bergen, my goodness, your work is wonderful. I'm thrilled that by coincidence, if you will, your information came to me via who knows where, gremlins on the computer. And this has just been a joy. I love your book. Thanks so much. And those of you listening, check out assistancedog.org. Check out the Bergen University of Canine Studies. It is really impressive. Thanks again, Bonnie, for being my guest.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. Don't go away. I've got more good things to share with you.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, we've got a great lineup of guests this week, and here at the studio, we have set up a whole new system, and I'm going to be posting information about the upcoming guests. But this week, we're going to be talking to Edward Meyer from Ripley's Believe It or Not. They've got a brand new book out called Dare to Look. I've been a Ripley's fan forever. I just absolutely love the odd, the weird, the unique, the unusual, and we're going to definitely have it. So we'll be chatting about that tomorrow, and then what I learned from my six-month-old, everything I needed to know. That's right. That's Kawana Halsey. This lady has just got a lot of stories to share. And then the frugal foodie, Laura Starr, is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about how you can make those dollars of yours stretch further. And lessons in courage, Don Oscar Miro Quesada. Lessons in courage. We are going to be talking with him about that. So all of this and more is going to be coming up this weekend. Wow, we've got a tremendously dynamic lineup this month, and soon, within the next day or two, I hope to have all of the information up for you so that you can review it. Well, I wanted to share a little bit of a weird fact. I love, again, the odd, the bizarre, the unique, strange stories, and there is one call about a ship, and it was called the Hainimoa, and this ship, the name Hainimoa, came from a chief. It was the daughter's name of a very powerful chief in New Zealand. And in 1892, the ship, which was named, again, after this girl who was well-loved, the Hainimoa ship, set sail on its first voyage. But it was a ship that was going to end up with a story that wasn't necessarily a real exciting one. That seemed to have bad luck from the time it was released into ocean waters. The captain that worked on that ship from the very beginning said there's something very wrong. Now, this was called a steamer. The first captain that worked on the ship went insane, had to be replaced. The second captain fell victim to foul play, thrown into prison. The third captain became a drunk and got the DD so badly that they fired him. Captain number four mysteriously died in his cabin. And the fifth voyage of this ship, the captain of that voyage, committed suicide. The next time this ship went out to sea, the Hainimoa, it lost its balance and turned over. It was righted again, went to sea once more, and apparently there were two sailors that ended up going overboard and were washed, you know, just washed into the sea. So they began to say the ship was cursed. And they said bad things were always happening around this ship until the last voyage of the Hainimoa in September 1917. And its demise came about because of a deadly German submarine. It was sent to a watery grave because of the ship, the German submarine, sending out a torpedo. And they said the crew that had been with this ship, now remember, the captains went through all kinds of stuff, a couple of the sailors did, but this crew, for some reason, was very loyal on this ship, and they would go out on the voyages again and again. This is what the crew said. They said that there were deadly forces that entered the ship when it was being built and were stored up in the vessel's heart. Now, how did they arrive and in what form? They said the first ballast, heavy material used to give the ship stability, was gravel from a London graveyard. Oh, I know. Cool story. Interesting story. Who knows? I don't. But I just thought I would share it with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. By the way, I want to thank the people at the Emerald Spiral Expo. It was a wonderful event. Here in Washington, we all felt like we needed to not just get out our kayaks, but also our sailing ships, because we got hit with storms, and we've still been getting hit with storms that have just been dumping acres and acres of water on us. In fact, they've got flood warnings out in certain areas. But this is the Pacific Northwest. We're used to the sky giving us voluminous amounts of water. And boy, Mother Nature is, after such a magnificent spring and summer, saying, don't take me for granted. And by the way, my newsletter is going to be going out. It'll be up on my website by tomorrow. And you're going to find that we're going to chat a little bit about how certain things can affect you. And I'm going to be, my topic in my newsletter is ingenuity. So we're going to be, you're going to be able to read that, and there's all kinds of fun information there. But I also wanted to, again, finish thanking the people that really helped me have such a successful time at the Emerald Spiral Expo. You were just great. The people were wonderful. And thanks for stopping by and saying hello, those of you that did. I really appreciate you. I just delighted in having that opportunity to meet with you publicly. We were talking a moment ago about how important education is, and I know we've just got a little bit of time before we're going to be closing out today, but I wanted to share something that to me is very sad. It has to do with the Albanian people. The Albanian people, according to a reporter, Vicky Gann, said they're living in isolation, thousands of them. They are in their homes. They're afraid of leaving because they're afraid they're going to be killed in blood feuds. You'd think that this would go by the way of the dinosaur, but no. These feuds are often fueled by a lot of ignorance and a lot of unnecessary hate. And this is rooted in a 15th century code of conduct called the Kanun. And it was revived after the fall of communism in 1990. And in many regions, it commands more authority than contemporary criminal law. And the arguments, slights, rivalries end up in fights that take over entire families, including the children. And I have the most heart-wrenching photograph in front of me that was taken by a photographer that was documenting the lives of these people that are basically in hiding. And there are two little boys, Christian and Alexander Vukai. He said they can't even see a future. As young as they are, they have no future. They're 8 and 10 years of age. They've never gone to school, and they have absolutely no contact with the outside world. He said they live with a law stronger than their destiny. For them, time is stopped. Education is so important. The only way you can overcome fear is by being aware that you have choice. How sad that thousands of people are so frightened for their lives that they have literally become prisoners of something that went back to the 15th century. The only way you can get past that fear is with education. How are you going to get it if you're hiding in a house? The same goes for us here. You need to remember, it's important to open your mind, expand your mind. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Remember, you're never too old to learn. You are always able to execute choices, but only if you know that they're there to take advantage of. Don't be afraid of life. There is so much out there that's available to us. And many times, if we isolate ourselves, we don't even have a hope or a prayer of being able to make our world, our experience, richer than we could have ever possibly imagined. This is Donna Sebo. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are in this wonderful planet of ours. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.